Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. South Dakota Public Broadcasting is exploring the future of faith in South Dakota through a series of conversations about faith, religion, disillusionment, and redemption. Today, we meet South Dakotans representing the Baha'i faith. It's one of the world's youngest religions, and it celebrates the oneness of humanity while encouraging worship through meaningful acts of service. Joining us today from the Janine Basinger Studio at South Dakota State University, Diane Nagy and Annette Luthy. Diane, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Laurie. I appreciate the opportunity.
Annette, thanks for joining us as well.
Thank you, Laurie. I'm glad to be here.
So this is a faith tradition that is going to be new to many South Dakotans. Maybe they have not even heard of it. So we're going to start with some basics. But first, I want to hear how you kind of came to this faith in the first place. And Diane, tell me a little bit about your upbringing and family members who were, I don't know how to say it, were Baha'i? Is that how
yes.
Okay. Who were Baha'i?
Right. Yeah. So my grandparents were Baha'is, and my mother was Baha'i as well. And so she raised me in the Baha'i faith. She raised myself and my sister in the Baha'i faith. But it's not something that you inherit from your parents. It's something that at the age of 15, which is considered the age of maturity in the Baha'i faith, you make a conscious decision about whether or not this is something that is true for you and you want to become a member of. And so when I turned 15, I decided that this was something that I wanted to embrace. But I did grow up learning about the tenets of the Baha'i faith and interacting with Baha'i communities. My mom took us to various places around the world. The Baha'i faith is very widespread. It's the second most widespread religion. There are Baha'is all over the world. Yeah. And that's because the Baha'is are encouraged to travel to places where there aren't Baha'is so that they can serve as resources in that community. You know, before we had the internet, it was essentially spreading via word of mouth. And so by going to other countries, we could tell people about the faith if they were interested in finding out about it.
So, Diane, some of your earliest memories that now as an adult you associate with the Baha'i faith, because for so many of us who grow up in a faith tradition, you know, those memories are maybe woven into family life or woven into, mm-hmm. you know, a daily activity or a weekly activity. When you look back on childhood, what are some of those early memories that you say, oh, that was faith in action in my life?
So one of the main tenets of the Baha'i faith is that we're all members of one human family. And by traveling to other countries, I got to really experience that in a very visceral way. So my Baha'i community, when we lived in Greece, was composed of a family from Iran and a couple from Germany and a young woman from Ireland, a gentleman from Ethiopia, and then my mom and my sister and myself from the United States. And so it was a very diverse community, but we were celebrating the things that we had in common unity and diversity. And then while I was in Greece, I was also going to an international school. And so it was a small school, but there were people from all over the world attending that school. And so I really got this intimate affinity for the idea that we're all connected. We all share the same basic needs and goals and aspirations, and that the things that unite us are much stronger than the things that we allow to divide us.
Hmm. Annette, tell me a little bit about because you're raised in a different faith and then you come to the Baha'i faith later on. Tell us a little bit about your journey from one to the other.
Well, I was raised in the Lutheran Church here in North Dakota and Oklahoma. I grew up Lutheran, and I also was a member of the Episcopal Church for a number of years. And then I heard about the Baha'i faith, and its focus on the oneness of humanity was certainly very significant for me, but also the concept of one God, and that all religions come from that same source, and all teach the basic, all the founders of the world's religions teach about love and harmony. And so it was very appealing to me in its breadth and depth. And also, you know, becoming a Baha'i didn't mean I needed to let go of the basic tenets that Jesus brought to Christianity. What it did was allowed that to become broader in terms of recognizing that the teachings from Abraham, Moses, Jesus, Krishna, Buddha, Muhammad, that all of those at heart were the same thing, and that through the Baha'i faith, we embrace those teachings of the founders of those faiths. So it was a matter of growing into something larger rather than giving up.
And Annette, I want to dive a little deeper into what you just said, because throughout these conversations with people of different faiths, we've talked to several people who have left the Christian church because of some kind of dissatisfaction, and some of them have come home again to the same church. Some of them have just sought a different congregation in the same faith. And one of the things that they kind of universally express is this tension that can exist depending on what church you've been at, that going somewhere else is sacrilegious or sinful, or, you know, damnation awaits you. So tell me a little bit, and you're coming at it from a different perspective, Annette, when you're saying, I'm not leaving one thing, I'm expanding and I'm growing into something larger. And that's, did you have any of that sort of tension from families and friends or on your own that you had to reconcile or explain?
Yes, I did have some. Of course, some of that was there. In fact, my grandmother was quite afraid for me and said she would pray for my soul. Yes.
You said thank you, or what?
Right.
How did you?
Yes, I did. Yeah. Yes, I did. I said thank you very much. Mm-hmm. You know, as I always pray for you. You know, so
yeah.
Yes. So that.
Diane, how do you explain when people, when people do ask questions? Are people very curious about the Baha'i faith, or is there an awareness about what it is? What do they want to know? What kind of questions do they ask you first?
Well, you know, I wish that there were more curiosity than I've experienced. I think that I've been in Brookings, South Dakota for 19 years now, and I think that South Dakotans are very polite and don't want to intrude or inquire about something that may be personal. And so I seek out opportunities to tell people about the Baha'i faith and wish that people did ask more questions.
And that's one of the roles of this show that I'm finding with this faith conversation, is how many people are nervous about us having it, but how many people are tuning in because it's really an introvert or very polite way to sort of eavesdrop on someone else's conversation to get that information. So,
Yeah,
let's ask some of those questions. So is there what you would consider a scripture or a sacred text or some kind of holy book? What sort of teachings and writings are there in the Baha'i faith?
Well, we have a wealth of scripture. Baha'u'llah, whose name means the glory of God, is the founder of the Baha'i faith. And so Baha'is are followers of Baha'u'llah. That's the derivation of the name. And he wrote voluminously. He was imprisoned because of his faith for 40 years. And in that time, he wrote multiple texts to answer complex religious questions, to explain the nature of the world and develop these laws and systems that form the foundation of our faith. And he wrote to leaders proclaiming his faith across the world in government and religion. And so we have tablets and books that he wrote. And then there's also a line of succession in the Baha'i faith. So after Baha'u'llah passed away, his eldest son, whose name is Abdul Baha, which means the servant of Baha, which is a title that he adopted for himself, he took leadership of the faith, and he also wrote many texts. He traveled to North America, actually, in 1912 and throughout Europe. And so we have the talks that he gave in his travels, as well as tablets that he wrote. And then his eldest grandson, Shoghi Effendi, took leadership of the faith after Abdu'l-Bahá passed away. And he, too, wrote many texts that helped us to understand and interpret the writings of the faith. And he translated them into English. He was Oxford educated. And then after Shoghi Effendi passed away, the leadership of the faith passed to the Universal House of Justice, which is our international governing body that's democratically elected. And they, too, provide guidance to the worldwide Baha'i community to help us maintain our focus and vision and understand how our changing times, how the revelation of Baha'u'llah apply and relate to the challenges that we're facing in our daily lives.
You say he traveled, the first, he traveled from where? This is a Persian influence, 18th century Persia, is that?
Right. Okay. It started in Iran, which was Persia at the time. Baha'u'llah was then exiled to Baghdad, where he lived in exile for 10 years, and then was further exiled to Constantinople and Adrianople, and then ultimately was imprisoned in Acre, a prison city in what is now Palestine. So the world center of the Baha'i faith is in Israel. That's where the Universal House of Justice is seated. Abdu'l-Bahá, when the Young Turk Revolution released a lot of political prisoners, Abdu'l-Bahá was able to leave because he was imprisoned with his Baha'u'llah's entire family was imprisoned. So when Abdu'l-Bahá was able to leave prison, he then traveled to Europe and America.
I was reading through just very briefly some of the writings that I was able to find on the U.S. website. Mm-hmm. There's a theme that you notice right away is a lot of love and a lot of kindness and a lot of compassion that seems to come out again and again and again. And certainly not a comprehensive survey of the text, but it was notable how often that this was a faith that led with love.
Yes, we really are about fostering joy and unity and harmony among the people of the world and among the religions of the world. So that comes through very strong. Yes.
Yeah. Annette, tell us about gathering or worship or assemblies. Tell us how people get together here in South Dakota.
Well, we have some places where there are 9 or more members, and if there are 9 or more members, then they form an assembly, which is a local administrative body. Most of the believers in South Dakota are in smaller towns and smaller numbers, smaller groups or individuals. There is a Baha'i calendar of 19 days of 19 months, or 19 months of 19 days each, and then 4 days, which is brings the number to 365. And those few days are called Ayamiha, when we're just about to enter Ayamiha. It comes at the end of February. And that's a time of hospitality and service and getting together for joyful celebrations. On a regular basis, we have a 19-day feast, which is a gathering of the believers in the area. And that has both worship and prayer segment, an administrative segment, and then socializing and getting to know one another. One of the things that's really a focus is creating unity even in our small communities. So a focus on truly developing friendships and close ties with those in our community.
Yeah. Diane, when we talk about the future of faith in South Dakota, some faith communities are growing, some are dwindling, some are just shifting into, different forms as new generations come along. What are some of the challenges facing Baha'i people worldwide? And then let's talk a little bit about the future of this faith in the state and in this small region. Worldwide, it seems when we talk about human beings being part of one family, the planet's not necessarily doing so well in that regard. That has to be a huge challenge to sort of live that out in the world.
Well, I disagree. I think we're actually doing much better than we often hear in the media. And I think that there's a lot of there are a lot of systems that are being built up around the world to help bring people together. There's technology that enables that, and then there's also just a growing awareness of the fact that we're in this together, and we share this planet, and we have to cooperate and work together to preserve our resources and to enable people to live together in peace and justice. We have to work together to do that. So the challenges I think facing Baha'is around the world is just emergence from obscurity. And I think that people are fearful of things they don't know. And so, you know, we want to make people more aware of what the Baha'i faith is. There are some Baha'i communities that are facing persecution. The Baha'is in Iran, in Yemen, and other places in the Middle East are struggling because they're being persecuted because of their faith. And so we try to raise awareness about those challenges and promote human rights all around the world. The challenges for Baha'is in the U.S., we're very fortunate in the United States with our freedom of religion and the ability to speak freely about our beliefs and share them with others. But again, it's the challenge of just getting the word out and helping people to understand that that we have this common identity and that we shouldn't let these systems that continually pit us against one another, you know, we define ourselves as, you know, in us versus them terms rather than understanding that we have this common identity and shared goals and that we want to work together towards the same goals and not fight over limited resources.
Hmm. Annette, the future of the Baha'i faith in South Dakota, where do you sort of see the opportunities?
Well, I think the future in South Dakota in some ways is similar to other places. It's a matter of people hearing about it and asking about it. We do a lot of teaching in terms of the principles of the Baha'i faith. We don't do proselytizing or try to convince people to become Baha'is. But many people, when they encounter the Baha'i faith, find that it resonates for them. So I think that's important, and we're seeing the Baha'i faith growing to some extent in South Dakota. I also think that, you know, continuing to work with interfaith groups is one of the places that makes sense for us. We're encouraged to do that, to engage others, those from other faiths. So I think our ability to serve the community is expanded as we are part of those groups and work alongside them.
And I think, you know, this may sound trite and cliche, but the future is also the children.
Yes.
And there's a big focus in the Baha'i faith on education. We believe that ignorance is the foundation for prejudice. And so we promote education, universal access to education. And in the Baha'i community, we really look at work educating children to teach them about virtues, teach them that they have, you know, these spiritual qualities, that they're a mine rich in gems of inestimable value that, you know, that education allows us to access. And so we have classes for children and then also for junior youth, which are, you know, in this age of transition from childhood to adulthood, where they're developing their sense of morality, their sense of purpose, their sense of identity. And so we help them understand that if their focus is outward, you know, on serving other people, and they develop a sense of purpose and agency and authority, that it can really transform how they view themselves and how they interact in their communities. And so that's part of the future that we work towards.
Definitely. Yeah.
You can find all our Future of Faith conversations on our website at listen.sdpb.org. It's great to have some folks from the Baha'i faith having a seat at that table as well. Annette Luthy and Diane Nagy, thank you so much for being here with us. We appreciate your time. Come back.
Okay. Thank you, Lori. We'd love to. Mm-hmm.